everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of Panditri on a Pint. We are three blokes today having an above average football conversation. Joining me on the podcast is Vaishnav and Akshat. And it has been a while since we've done this, so I've had to read off the introduction from notes on my laptop. Because
damn,
I had temporarily forgotten how we kick episodes off.
It's supposed to be like riding a bike, Amar.
What do you mean? Oh yeah, now the bike riding starts. All of this was just getting onto the bike. But it's been a while, and we apologize to our listeners for that. We've just been extremely busy, and a lot of us have had some major life changes, which we're getting used to. For example, Vaishnav is now... what's the technical term you say, bro? Anyway, Vaishnav has passed the California state bar.
Yeah.
So claps for Vaishnav.
Yeah,
for a second, I thought you were talking about him wearing glasses, bro. And I'm like, that's not that big a change.
Oh, shit, yeah. Professor Vaishnav is wearing glasses too now. So Professor Vaishnav has also moved into a new house.
Yeah, today finally finished unpacking, man. Fuck.
Professor Vaishnav has finally unpacked. Let's unpack this episode.
Smooth.
Thanks, bro. Last time we recorded, it was on the precipice of the city title, of their treble winning season, and I don't think there's much to say in that. I mean, they did win the treble, the world knows it. We're not going to dwell too much on it. We're going to look to future horizons. One of them being a Saudi takeover for Man United. Akshat Vaishnav, do you think that move has completely fizzled out, and do you think you'll see any movement in the next few months, or it's pretty flat now?
I mean, the lack of news is really strange, because normally any sort of rumor at Manchester United particularly just gets picked up and run all over the media, even if it's not legitimate sources. You know, people just keep talking and writing about it, and I feel like we're at that part of the takeover where we expect a lot of movement, but it's just totally died down. I do think that, you know, if things are moving, they will take time, just because of how massive and how complicated the structure of the club is. So I mean, I'm not necessarily concerned about how much time is taking from that perspective, because we know it's not something which it's not one owner who's just selling 100%.
Doesn't happen overnight.
So we spoke about the ownership structure I don't know if that episode was released or not, but we spoke about the ownership structure and how there are multiple stakeholders, how, you know, the voting structure is, how some shares are worth more than the others. So to complete that, and it is a publicly listed entity as well. So it was always going to be a lot more complicated. And I hope that the reason we're not hearing much is because there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes to iron out all this kind of stuff. But I think from a fan perspective, we would have definitely wanted it to happen or not happen, but like some decision to be made conclusively before preseason, so that, you know, we can get a good idea of what the transfer window is going to look like. I think that would help for the stability of the squad and the peripheral staff as well. You know, the sporting director, are they even going to have a job at United? The scouting network, all these kind of things. And even, you know, if there are potentially going to be new owners, they'd like to have control of the transfer market for their first season for the club, right? Like, think of what Todd Bowley did at Chelsea. Like, whether it was good decision or not, he had full control of what was going to happen or the future of the club. I think we are stuck in a limbo right now. Unfortunately, I think the only thing is that we can do is just wait. And I also think that no news is kind of good news in this regard. If people were pulling out, they would have publicly pulled out and said that, you know, it's not happening for us anymore. Because people like to stay ahead of the story. If one of the earlier bidders, when they pulled out, they made it very well known that, okay, I forgot his name, but the guy who's like, I want 50% fan ownership, he just pulled out and he said it publicly that, yeah, it's not going to be me. So the fact that we haven't heard that, I think, is good news. But yeah, there's not really a lot to go on right now.
And also the last bit that was sent in was a very explicitly, it was said that it's going to be a take it or leave it bit by the Sheikh. So, I mean, he had made his stance pretty clear. And you're right, Akshat, if there was any delay in the sale, or if someone had pulled out of the sale, they would have announced it. But Vaishnav, I think these talks started like last November, and ever since when the talk started, you always said that it's not going to be done until Q1 is, I think, the timeline that you had given to this deal. How do you see it panning out right now?
Yeah, like that's what I'm going to start off saying is, like, November is what, 8-9 months, I guess, behind us. That's like a pretty really small timeline, short timeline when it comes to like something this big. I don't know if it's about like what Akshat said of the Sheikh saying this is his final offer, take it or leave it. I feel like I've heard that about 14 times at this point.
Yeah.
So that I don't know anymore what his final offer is, because I feel like I've heard multiple sets of terms, conditions, amounts, and he's saying, yeah, this is it. But like, I think one key thing is to understand is that a lot of this is their acquisition of the club itself is the goal. They want to buy Manchester United. So I don't think any price, unless it's like $2 trillion, like any normal, even if astronomical, any normal, sane, even a slightly overvalued price will be paid for. I just think they're probably trying to iron out all the shit that's going to come their way when it comes to like just appearances, I guess. But even that is hard to say now, because this has happened already multiple times in the Premier League. So it's not, this is not some first off that we've never seen something like this happen, where it's like, you know, state fund backed individuals coming in with a lot of money. So and that state happens to be not having the best like PR, so to speak, like just image.
Yeah.
In the national media or international media. So that maybe is part of it. Probably is. Maybe they're trying to figure out what the, you know, reaction will be. But I don't know if that can be a part of it, because I feel like I live in my own silo wherein that is a consideration, because I feel like 9 out of 10 people don't even see that as a consideration. And rightly so, right? Like, why think so much, man? It's just like a freaking football club being bought, which I get. So it's hard to say what it is, but I think a large part of why it's getting delayed so much is because it's probably super complicated, right? Like, exactly like Akshat said, and there's no definitive, oh shit, these guys are out of your type of move. The fact that they're in the race means I think it's going to eventually end up only one way.
Yeah.
But I guess it's about timing for when that happens. And yeah, I didn't see it happening any. I don't think it'll happen before next season starts. If it does, it should happen soon, which I don't think will happen.
Yeah.
January maybe, but even then I don't think so. I don't even know anymore. I initially thought maybe sometime after financial year starts, like this year, because that's when it would ramp up, it'll look good to buy something so big. But like now already that looks like it's not gonna happen. That exclusivity news had come out but like 2 weeks ago in negotiations, like only those guys were negotiating on final sale terms. So I don't know what happened to that. That was a pretty big step. But I guess even then, it will still probably take a lot of time. So I guess it's a matter of time.
Yeah. And for United fans, of course, they're hoping that it would be, as Akshat said, before the transfer window slams shut. So that, I think last season, Eric's first signing was like late July, right? After preseason, the first signing was Malasia that he got in. So that's definitely changed. We saw the arrival of Mason Mount. But to have a solid second season, he would need backing in the transfer market. And when your club is in limbo, I mean, there's really no other way that you can go, because from the Glazers' perspective, why would they want to invest in more money into the squad when when they're going to be pulling out anyways. Yeah. It doesn't make sense for them, and they're anyways.
But they never put money, you know, anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. They're notorious for being like very, very tight-knit and hold their purses very tightly. So it's almost a lose-lose for United fans at this point, unless something major happens in the next set.
Normal time for being a United fan. Lose-lose. That's how
But like, to what you said, Ammar, that final take to lead offer, that's how I negotiate with auto drivers, bro. I'm like, nahi bhaiya, 150 mein jayega, nahi to nahi jayega. It's like, I just feel like it's been a lot of that, but you do end up still talking and still like settling on a price. So, yeah,
take it all, like it's a Logan Roy negotiation tactic, bro.
The Sheikh is looking at Abraham Glazer like, you are not serious people. That boy is putting ponytail and he's putting that.
Congratulations on seeing the biggest fucking number.
In the words of Shakespeare, just take the fucking money. Fuck, we can go on full episode of Logan Roy quotes. Anyways, let's move ahead and let's broach a topic that we've sort of been like flirting with but haven't really gotten into the crux of it. Again, it's related to Saudi Arabia, but this time the league. The Saudi league is just weird, man. They're buying these players left, right and center. And from what I understand, it's the country that's buying the players and then just asking the players, like, where do you want to live?
Yeah.
Whether you want to go to Jeddah, you want to go to Mecca, wherever it is, and we'll put you in that team accordingly. Look at the roster of players that they've got. Nakshat, if you can just pull up. I mean, obviously, the big names are Benzema, Kalidou Koulibaly. I don't know if Hakim Ziyech finally got his move yet or not.
Kante.
N'Golo Kante.
Obviously, Ronaldo is already there.
Well, now no one will talk about
him because
Benzema
and all have come. Yeah, Ruben Neves, Edward Mendy, Joao Pedro, Jota.
Wait.
But the Celtic Jota.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. Firmino, Brozovic.
Even I was like lapsing for a second. Firmino actually just landed in Saudi and got like absolutely mauled by the fans at the airport.
I thought Lionel Saudi got kidnapped, became one of
the Watch your words in front of Vaishnav.
Bobby boy.
Choice of words should not be mauled. But yeah, I mean, not just that. Also, like, they've tried to get those big money managers as well. I mean, big name managers, let me say. They've got Jorge Jesus, Steven Gerrard, Robbie Fowler, Nuno.
Stevie G is in Saudi now. He is the next big thing.
By the way, it's a direct quote from Steven Gerrard saying that I'm not going to manage in Saudi. Like, not even exaggerating. He said those words exactly. And then, like, a few months later and a very full bank account later.
It's like that SpongeBob scene where, like, there's a cut a few moments later and then you see Stevie G in a hijab and a long
tried
beard.
To speak in Arabic for his announcement video. That's already a meme, dude. People are like, more people understand his Arabic than understand his English.
Man, Gerard was a person who slipped in shorts. Imagine him walking around in a hijab. How many times he would fall?
Bro, this is just becoming
a stretch.
Yeah, this is becoming mean. Cyberbullying.
Okay. Bad. But what do you guys think of Saudi's entire approach to make their league more, let's say, palpable?
You mean Abul? You know, palp. This is, they're making it. Like, now it's not like it was doing bad and now. Like, only now we even realize that it's a thing. No. To be fair.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like I said, not revamp, it's vamp.
Definitely, it's going to help in the viewership. I mean, for sure, right? People are going to go and watch Benzema play in the stadium, probably. But I don't know how many people will actually tune in to watch the games, like, on television.
But it'll increase. I mean, like, this is the way it works. It's not like horrible one season and the next season everyone's watching it. It's just slowly building viewership like
this.
Over time.
Yeah.
This is how not to do it, but no, so many times people have done it.
No, it's a very flash. I agree. It's flash in the pan. It's the thing is, if you can sustain getting these players throughout, like for the next 10, 15 years, that's when you can increase it. But it's never going to reach the viewership of a European league. Like, let's say top 7 European leagues also. Mm. I don't think there's going to be any threat to them. Per se, football's flagship product still is, club football's flagship product still is the UEFA Champions League. And it's for a reason. It's the best competition. It's amazing to watch. So no matter what you do, no matter how good a league you have, the fact that you're away from that is always going to be, let's say, a ceiling to how much interest people can take and how much interest players can have. The whole thing they're doing right now of the PIF, which is the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, who bought Newcastle, have now taken control of the 4 largest teams in Saudi Arabia. And they have told basically that each and every one of these clubs, they've given the direction that there's a lot of money. We want each of you to have at least 3 marquee European signings by the start of next season.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing right now. So the negotiation, like you said, Amar, it doesn't even happen with these clubs. It's not like a club's representative goes out to these teams, meets them, tries to convince them on the club's football project. It's just PIF be like, how much money do you want? Huh, come, we'll decide which one of these 4 clubs you're going to go into. So, it's a very weird, weird way of recruitment which we're seeing. I don't think we can compare it to anything else we've seen so far.
It is China. Comparable to what happened in China.
Yeah. But I think China struggled to get such big names also. But you're right. I mean, it's similar to what they tried to do.
Yeah, they maybe a much scale, richer scale. Yeah, scale is different. Yeah.
But Saudi as a country in general are right now so heavily promoting tourism. I mean, you're seeing it everywhere. And they want to compete with, say, the likes of Dubai in the Middle East. To make Saudi...
They're building a smart city, you know? They're building new...
They're doing a lot of things, man, in that country. So, I think it fits into, like, the overall philosophy of what they want to do over the next few years, which China didn't have. Of course, China were just trying to promote their football league.
No. That was a... No, bro, I mean, that's a little reductive. That whole thing was that that was like a massive road that they paved to get to that point. It was part of a much larger whole globalization scheme. Like even the Beijing Olympics is all part of that. It was all a plan. They wanted football to be big because everyone watches it. It's a similar thing, but like... Mm.
And then COVID happened.
No, not really. Financially, they couldn't do it. Like Akshat said, like scale was not big. They were not that. They didn't have that much money. That's the difference.
Hmm. How do you see this shaping up in the long run? Are there going to be major repercussions into what Saudi are doing right now?
Talent bleed is a problem. I think seeing people like Benzema, Ronaldo, they're pursuing Messi, even Kante, people who are past their prime going is palatable to fans. We're like, yeah, okay, last paycheck, let them go. You know, they've achieved whatever they had to. All these guys are Champions League winners, you know. But deals like, for example, the Zaha negotiations now, Ruben Neves.
Yeah.
This talent bleed is a little bit, scary. But I don't think it's going to affect the viewership of the European leagues at all and fans' interest in these things. Maybe, you know, if they can continue this exact thing for 15 years, that's when this conversation becomes a bit more real. But I just don't think that, you know, there's a worry about it right now in terms of competing with European top leagues. It's easy for us to say that, oh, they're signing players, but the gulf in quality, if you go like watch this entire Saudi season, there's a huge gulf in quality, like a huge, huge gulf in quality. It's not that you sign like even 15 of the best players in the world and the league is going to become amazing. It doesn't work like that.
In fact, I'm sure this has happened to you guys. You go down to play with some friends and there's some dude there who's just much better than everybody and you feel bad for playing that day. It like when someone is so much better than you, and especially if it's on this scale and your people are watching this, even Benzema turned that center back for the 18th time in that game, it's going to be like, oh shit, maybe we're not the greatest. And like this way of doing things always trips me out because it's such a, like, you're missing the big picture sort of way of doing things, wherein you get big guys from outside who are sort of at the end of their career arcs. You get managers who are not the biggest draws because those are at the biggest clubs, so you can't get those guys. So you get guys who have a niche name value, but who probably don't have the greatest of coaching credentials. Now, obviously, there are exceptions to this, but that's usually what ends up happening. But there's some cash in that person's name. Now, with these players, you do the exact same thing. That very rarely is going to be a cohesive footballing product. And then you have local talent under that who's just getting the shit end of the stick. And it's like, now what do I do? Like, and then there's stagnation and it doesn't go anywhere because you keep rinse and repeat that same cycle of getting great players who are now in it for a vacation, great freaking paycheck, and to chill, basically. Like, they're not going to be playing like they're playing when they're playing midweek games in the Champions League knockout stages. That's not there anymore. This is last lap, chill for a bit, and then leave. So, like, to do it this way always trips me out because you're shooting yourself in the foot by, you know, doing this whole mishmash, trying to get people who will get eyes. And then the people who are good. Ideally, you want Saudi Arabian players to be the core of the league and to be of world-class quality. That's not going to happen this way.
Yeah, like,
and we've seen something like this even in the ISL, right? In the early stages of the ISL, there was this whole thing of bringing back not even players like at the later end of their career, but players who had outright retired itself. Like, I think Berbatov was one of the names that had signed. Matarazzi, and these kind of players were coming into the league to play for 2 or 3 months, and everyone assumed that, oh my god, you know, I'm going to go and see Berbatov play in the stadium, why not? He was my idol maybe like 5-6 years ago. I was watching him week in, week out for United. But it didn't pan out the way everyone intended to, because obviously, like as Vaishnav said, they're not going to go with that intensity and that kind of match sharpness that you would expect. And luckily, what ended up happening for the ISL and for India, I think, is that the younger crop of players from the country itself, the quality and their technical ability just got better and better, where now the league is centered around the core Indian players.
But Amar, that didn't just happen. That's because the ISL moved away from it. Like, that was a strategic shift. When they realized that, you know, instead of having this exhibition style, let's get eyeballs into it. If the money is here, we finally have some money to spend on football, let's spend it on the right things. And like, I don't know, like maybe Saudi is putting this much money into their youth development and maybe they are doing that as well. I don't know. But what Vaishnav said is a great point. It's that getting better players into your country doesn't necessarily make your players better. One of the biggest examples of that in Indian football is that we had, like, you know, previously we had 5 foreign players allowed in the starting 11. And obviously all 5 foreign players would start, which means lesser opportunities for Indian players. And what that would mean, the critical positions, like striker, you need goals in the team, right? That would always go to a foreign striker, always. And as a result of that, today in India, there is a lack of people who can score goals. We have good people all around the pitch, but we still don't have someone who can score goals, apart from Chetri. So these are problems which will come for Saudi Arabian football, right? Now, if the focus is for Saudi Arabian football to become better, the money needs to be spent elsewhere as well. And I don't know if that's happening right now. If you keep going down this path, you don't have the youth structure of, say, Netherlands or even England, where you can get all the foreign players, but you're still going to be churning out talent like anything, right? Like, that does not just happen. So, I think that's a good point, which is that you need to kind of have a balanced approach. Getting more money into the league is never a bad thing, but in moderation, in a way which is going to help everyone grow. And not just, you know, get people to watch in Benzema versus Ronaldo highlights on Saturday morning or whatever, you know.
But what do you guys think of this kind of these teams that have an association with the Saudi Arabian League? Point in case Todd Boehly and Chelsea, where this man has just found a way to move all of his dead weight into the Saudi League, make his FFP statements look a lot better, and basically do what is probably the hardest for a club, that is to get value out of players that you're not using. I mean, I think what 40-50 million for each player on an average is what they've gotten by moving them from Chelsea to Saudi Arabia. And obviously now there are so many teams in Europe, right? And there are such limited teams in Saudi that not everyone will be able to have this relationship with the country, but teams who do will have a clear advantage.
I don't know, man. Like, it's a little bit out there in terms of the theory. It's more on the conspiracy theory edge, which there I've seen a lot of, you know, like videos debunking that as well. I think it made sense for Saudi to go for players in a club which is trying to clear out players, you know, and money is not an obstacle. So I don't know if I can like say that it's necessarily because of business relationships that they were able to do that. Like, I don't know. Again, like, I'm not denying it, but I can't accept it also.
Just for context for listeners who don't know, Todd Boehly's consortium Clear Lake Capital, yeah, right, has the Saudi Arabian, the PIF as one of their clients. So there was always a business relationship that was established before football came into the picture. Sorry, Akshat.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I think we spoke about this last transfer window where we were saying that it's always going to be tougher for Premier League clubs to sell because, number one, huge wages, which not any other league can compete with. And secondly, the only other place that they can earn those wages is within the Premier League. So that kind of inflated market within the Premier League is going to exist. And we've definitely seen that already in this short transfer window which we've had with Kai Havertz moving, Declan Rice moving, Mason Mount moving. I mean, these are huge, huge transfers with huge wages attached as well. So what's interesting now is that you do have maybe another player coming into the market who can spend those astronomical fees and can give those astronomical wages. So I find that a little bit more interesting than, you know, saying business dealings and such, or business relationships and such.
They're not going to be, that is true. Like, that, I take it at point, it's not as much a Boehly is laundering players through Saudi Arabia as much as it is good business. But I don't know, man. It's like, I don't think they're competing for the same player, you know, the Premier League and the Saudi League, in terms of will this price availability somewhere else make it more competitive in Europe? I don't think so. Because like, that type of player is going to get the top wages anyway. It's like that sort of a situation. It's just that the Saudi teams can offer them a shitload.
Okay. So let's move ahead. We've seen quite a few transfers already done and dusted in the window this season. Most noticeable names are, of course, Jude Bellingham to Madrid. And this is something that I want to talk about, where Madrid are having this clear strategy of attracting and persuading the young talent of global football to come and join them in their project. And I think some of the core players of Madrid are all under the age of, I think, 23 or 24. If you take in Vinicius, Tchouaméni, Camavinga, Valverde, Bellingham,
Rodrigo,
great set of world-class talent. I mean, these are people who have, three of them have played in like a World Cup final already. It's so refreshing to see this kind of transfer approach where they're setting themselves up for at least a good 4 or 5 years. And now there are talks of Mbappe as well, right? He said something about PSG being like a gossip club, and apparently all the PSG, the PSG players are now disgruntled. Like, what is this man doing?
I mean, why wouldn't you be? Like, what is that? This guy is just like,
for sure.
No amount of money can buy a player's like loyalty to your club, bro. If he's gonna be a diva, he'll be a diva. It's like, it's crazy to me that a player can just come out and say that about his own club, which is paying him like what, some gross like 200 million in 2 years or something. That was the deal, right?
Something stupid.
And the funniest part is like, he is the reason for the gossip. Like, he is the one making the gossip. If Gossip Girl ever wanted to come out with like a football themed season, then they should just do it with what PSG and Mbappe, the kind of relationship that they have. I don't get it. Like, okay, you've signed a multi-million dollar deal that we all thought was long term, no? Like, when he was so close to moving to Madrid.
No. 3 years.
When it happened, you're like, oh shit, he signed. And I feel like that was just yesterday, bro. Like, oh, I'm reading the same shit again. Like, what's going on? But what do you guys think of the Bellingham transfer?
Surprising he didn't go to Bayern. Dortmund player, bro. It's like somehow he missed out on a true destination. The only way Bayern don't get a Dortmund player is if he leaves Germany only, bro. Like that. Other teams don't compete. Mad player. He's going to kill it, man.
Yeah, he's one of those players I have no problem calling generational talent. He's one of those. If you have him in your team and you keep him for long, he's so good so early. That's the thing, right?
Like, they retired his jersey number. Remember that? He was like some 5 years old
in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And everyone clowned them for that, but they knew, bro. Like, I don't know. They knew when he was 17 only that he's going to be like this. Crazy.
That first PD teacher in his school that saw him play football would have been like, bro, what is happening here?
His mind must have been blown. He's like, oh shit.
Retire the number.
No, retire PT class from school. No kid is playing football again. Is it back.
But I mean, the thing about him is he's 21 or 22 now, maximum 22. I don't think he's more than that. And when you are 22 years old moving to Real Madrid and no one is saying words like, oh, he needs to settle in, or he needs time to develop, and no, none of that. He's already one of the world's best midfielders at 22.
Gotten big, no? Like, I feel like he's gotten
My man has filled out that frame, bro. Huge. He's a brick house.
Brick shit house. That's Chambers, bro. That's one of my favorite Premier League moments. When this guy dives and then Chambers looks at...
Traore.
Adava. He dives and Chambers, how you got over that? It's been like a brick fucking shit house.
But yeah, we saw Bellingham at the World Cup also for England, and he looks so in command of that midfield. So
hey, he was one of the best players, man.
Yeah. So Madrid have I think already kind of won the transfer market with his signing, but there've been others as well. Havertz moving to Arsenal, getting that nice fat paycheck.
Yeah.
I don't know where he fits into the team. I think Poe would have been better in to give us his insight on that. But
Odegaard or Jesus rotation. Probably both.
Yeah. Great signing for Arsenal. I mean, they've gotten a Premier League quality player into their team who didn't necessarily fire for Chelsea. But I think in an Arsenal system where they are more intricate.
Know what they're doing.
Yeah, in a way. Know what they're doing is one. Not having Frank Lampard as a manager is another. So, it could work out well for Arsenal.
It will, man. I think the season's going to be crazy.
Yeah. I'm a little bit skeptical about Havertz. Not because of, like, like in an ideal world, the player Havertz is and the team which Arsenal is, it's a good fit, but he's not looked really good in the Premier League. Yeah. His potential is crazy, undeniable, but that doesn't always work like that, right? A player with potential realizes it. So it's a risk, but I think like the club is backing their scouting, their system, settled structure, like you said, manager who knows what he wants to do, very important. So
hey, when's Frank going to Saudi, guys? When do we want to put money on that?
Bro, like, just if even Saudi doesn't want Frank, right? We've reached this level now. This is where we've reached, bro. Even they don't want to touch him. He'll work in Saudi for free, bro. That is how desperate he is for a job right now. Because I will hunt down the sporting director of the next team or club which gives him a job for an interview and a psych evaluation, first of all. Because it's just, why would you do that? Why?
No, you should get them audited, bro. They're doing money laundering.
I think Frank has a more realistic chance of going to Saudi as a player, coming out of retirement and going as a manager. They seem to be treading down that path. But just to quickly touch up, Declan Rice as well to Arsenal. That I think is the bigger highlight. Excellent fucking signing. They needed a player in that position. What better player to get than one of the most touted English midfielders? And I don't even think they paid the British tax as much, bro. Because I would always
105 is insane, Dawan. It's the second most ever for a... Bellingham is number one and Declan Rice is number two. So it's a lot of money.
Yeah, but still, I mean, Declan Rice is always in the upper echelons of like 150 million, like, that's how much he would cost in my head.
It's just FIFA numbers. Oh, 150 around for what? Yeah.
for a British player. I mean, if you could pay 80 for Harry, I think Declan Rice
being absolute dumb fucks. You can't use that as the standard.
And
they just signed Justin Timber also. So Arsenal are doing some great business early on in the transfer window. And
Jurrien.
Nobody.
Jurrien, my bad. My bad.
I think his brother is playing. He has a twin brother.
Damn.
Yeah. And for all you know, his name is Justin. So you could have done one mad identity swap just now.
Arsenal should check before they sign. Which one are you?
Imagine they're listening to this podcast and like, hey, wait a second.
check the name again.
If they're twin brothers, like, they won't even know after the guy has come which one they've signed. Either one of the two could have come.
It's a Fabio and Rafael situation.
That's such a hack, man. Twins playing the same sports team. Fucking cartoon.
Yeah, one right back, one left back. So cool, bro.
Fucking cartoon bullshit.
Moving ahead, what do you guys think about Mason Mount? Akshat, are you excited? Mobile number 8.
I don't know why people are like skeptical about this one, dude. He's damn good. He's really good.
Eric told me, shut up and take it. Fuck.
Yeah.
We trust the boss, bro. But even I don't know, man. He's how is he a worse bad player than Havertz? Over what we've seen, like not even like potential and all, like just what we've seen throughout the career.
He didn't play that much, no, the last season. That was the only drawback, I think.
Yeah, last season was a disaster for everyone involved. And he was in and out, but like seasons before that, he's been great, bro. Like,
he's taking shots this episode, man.
No, but he's right. I mean, last season cannot be the basis for anything, no? It's like, especially when you're talking about someone like Mason Mount, where not only for Chelsea, but for England as well, he's been amazing. And he's one of the first names on the team sheet for Southgate. And we've been vehemently like talking about how United needed that extra sort of creativity in midfield apart from Bruno, because we felt that Bruno is the only one who was like a progressive midfielder who was moving the ball forward. And when you're getting someone like Mason Mount next to him, I would assume that Mount is an upgrade to what Eriksen is right now. Of course, you're getting better work rate because he's younger and has a better heart. But what? It's true.
You said younger is enough.
Yeah, you got to stop there.
Shit. Papa Eriksen is catching strays. But Eric has called him like a future midfielder, a futuristic midfielder in the sense of what an ideal midfielder would be for him, with a defensive work rate as well, great on the press. I'm excited. I think it's very, like, if you're getting him, if he's available, he's English, yeah, fucking take it. Why not?
Why do you care that he's English, though? What do you mean by that?
He's English, bro. We generally end up paying so much British tax for our players. We didn't pay for him.
No, Ahmad's like, he's not one of those foreigners.
he's Brexit boy.
Not coming to my lands and bringing their scum.
But it's a huge upgrade in terms of like what you're saying with the defensive side of things. We're going from Eriksen, who after like 55 minutes is a liability in your defensive scheme and your press and your positioning, to someone who's one of the best pressers in the league from midfield. So it's a huge, huge upgrade from that point of view. There've been a lot of talk about his pass completion percentage, and you know, we already have Bruno, who's is already low. So you know, Mount is going to come and we won't be able to keep the ball in midfield and all. But I mean, it's different teams, different tactics, like what players are expected to do, what their role is within that midfield. I think we're going to see, rather than Bruno being an out and out number 10, I think we're going to see more of a switch to two number 8s.
Yeah.
Both, like, you know, forward attacking either left half space or the right half space, creating from those areas. So I in fact think, if this works the way I think Erik ten Hag is trying to make it work, we're going to see two goal scoring number 8s, because both of them are very, very good in front of goal. And yeah, I'm excited for that. I really am. I think it's a good system signing. It's the type of player Erik wants, it's the type of player the team needs. And young, it's great that we're finally signing like actual people, young people in their prime as well, you know, because normally we've signed like,
yeah,
I don't want to get into
without paying those obscene figures that we've seen for players in the past that we've signed.
Yeah.
Let's move ahead. Vaishnav, I have to tell you that my eyes have been opened, and in the future, I'm going to try and make it my responsibility to open your eyes as well.
Mm-hmm.
To the beautiful, beautiful game of Indian football. This magnificent team. This magnificent team. These absolute heroes that have won my heart. So, India won the SAIFF championship that happened recently. And I had the privilege of watching two of their games.
Nice.
Three of their games, actually. With Akshat, and Akshat was the man who opened my eyes, and I will forever be in Akshat's debt for that.
We're good now, bro. This is when you invest. This is when you invest.
Yeah, we're so good. Yeah, we're so good. Like, this is from someone who's taken like a absolute 360 degree turn on my perception of what Indian football was, because I had watched it like 5 years ago and it was just lump and hit. These long, hopeful balls that were put into the air and nobody was winning them. Cut to, like, we are doing one-touch football, playing out from the back, a proper pressing system. Chetri is a fucking animal. Intricate plays. Not that many goals, but that'll come. Yeah. And Akshat and I were for the finals together, which happened in Bangalore, which was loud.
The best atmosphere I've ever been a part of. Man. Yeah. Ever. Nothing comes close. Yeah, no sport. Yeah, yeah. All sports included. That was just beautiful, man. What a moment.
Yeah. And it was non-stop. I think we conceded first, and after we conceded, it got even louder. even more sort of visceral, the atmosphere. It was a great experience to be part of. And I watched a few games in Europe. It's a hot take, but when I was at Anfield, only the You'll Never Walk Alone at Anfield was great, but the atmosphere was tepid throughout, and this was far louder than that. And I think almost the same capacity. There were more than 30,000 people in the stadium.
No, 27K was there. 26.8 or 26.9 was. I just like basically capacity for Kantirwa. It was amazing, man. Bro, Vaishnav, like, what if I tell you we have a left footed centre back who can spray diagonals to our wingers, bro?
Oh my god.
No.
Like, those are the words you need to use for Vaishnav.
No.
Yeah, left footed center back.
Have you sent an email to Eric? CC me on that email. Send it now. Send it quickly, bro.
Yeah, if Anwar Ali's representation is listening to this podcast, we have literally the entire tournament been saying that we want to buy the rights for this guy. We want to put him in front of some cameras. Dude, he is so good, dude. Vaishnav, he's so calm on the ball. He'll take it past the press and then just spray it out wide. It's amazing how good we play now, bro.
La Paza, right.
Bro, there was a moment where he's on the far left side trying to get a clearance, and the ball has bounced and he's taken a no-look volley that was a diagonal to our right winger.
Like, it was one of those moments where he's getting pressed, the ball is in the air, and it's one of those things like, oh, if he takes one bad touch here, gone. And the man, first time volleys a dude, has a beautiful crossfield pass to like a winger.
Nice.
Jizz. For all the Indians who are listening to this podcast, especially for you, if you've not gotten onto the bandwagon already, I'm sure you'd have seen a lot on social media after they won, but try to follow the sport when this country is playing. I think we're playing the Asia Cup next, start of next year, early
there's
in January.
There's a tournament in September as well, so...
Yes. Oh, nice.
That's not in India though, I think that's in Thailand, but
yeah
that's...
Go to Thailand, go watch it.
Fuck yeah.
Vaishnav, you have a massive map behind you, bro. What are you planning to do with that?
World domination now. I think I have a better one.
Is it one of those things like where you're waiting for a moment where whatever's on your table, you swipe it off, you put the map down and say, guys, I have a plan.
For that, you need to get a divider protractor also.
So get it, no?
I don't have a geometry box, bro. I need to get a better map, but this map sucks. Bro, Amazon, man. You get baked and go buy shit on Amazon. It looks so good. You see it in person, it looks like somebody printed it on single-ply toilet paper.
I think on that note, we shall close this episode. Thank you, listeners, for... for bearing with us and for waiting. And if you've already lost hope in our production cycle, then we shall do our best to win your confidence back. But anyway, I'm not promising, but we will try and catch you next week for some more amazing football content.
Just say next time.
Next time. That's nice. So, loophole. Come back after 2 years. But anyways, thank you, fellow podcasters, Akshan Vaishnav. We will catch you very soon. Bye bye.